Karen, hoe gaan het?
Het gaan goed, dank je. Met jou, Sam.
Oh, that's enough Afrikaans. I've always wanted to speak to people about this, who are called Karen in South Africa. Are you aware of the Karen trend?
Yes, the name Karen or Karen has dropped by 13% apparently.
And that's just on the stock exchange?
That's just 2020, and you know, it's going to get worse. Nobody wants to be a Karen, Karen, Karen.
Karen. No, but I mean, it's just the meme culture. It's pervasive, would you say?
Yeah. It's just unfortunate because the name Karen actually means unblemished or pure, which is sad that we are now, what do you call it? What kind of a figure is a Karen?
She's not good.
She's speaking to the manager. She's complaining. She's telling the kids to stop making a noise, go back to their own country, speak their own language.
For me, the South African Karen is the one in Checkers who's complaining about something not being there. You know,
in Checkers.
Exactly. Gordon Ramsay did a Checkers collaboration. People lost their minds. I mean, it's just like a good advertising campaign. But Karen, for me, is not Karen Zoid, the rock star, you know. She's like a Constantia mom. That's a Karen.
Karen.
Like Chepu.
Sucks, man.
Chepu, where's the stuff?
I should have changed my name when I changed my surname as well.
But I mean, you started Greef Properties, that was you?
Yeah, and Greef Butchery in Nasna. What did I touched you. I touched you.
You're going to have to take it out.
Corona. Oh, sorry.
A sang or two. The whole package. No, but this space, I mean, you've been putting on shows. What's that been like?
Quiet, because they've been mostly streaming shows. We're starting to perform now. We just did a show for 500 people outdoors at Blauwklippen. It was fun. But yeah, most of my shows are streaming.
Mm. Oh, it's awkward. Do you get like the Zoom clap hands and after?
Luckily I'm used to television and I enjoy TV and I produce my own stuff. I think streaming is stressful if you don't really know what's going on. The audience is such a huge part of a show. It's like the sound engineers, also the unseen band members. The audience is another massive component to the energy or the vibe. I actually realized how much I changed my mind on stage because of the audience.
Oh, and they're going with the flow, picking up what they like.
Yeah, or change songs or extend songs or throw out something. See, we're not going to do another ballad. These people want to dance. Or, I got them now. They're all nostalgic. Let's do some more old stuff. You know, you kind of, it's a dance you do with them.
That's crazy. Because, I mean, you go to a concert and I kind of expect a musician's got their set list. A guy like Ben Howard, who's like this very quirky English musician, we went to one of his concerts.
He has an all-female band.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, now I can't say anything bad about him. Otherwise, he's a fucking misogynist. He cut his dick off. I mean, that's where we are right now.
But Ben.
But he didn't. No, not Ben's dick. They've probably already taken it.
Howard.
and he only spoke to the crowd in the 7th or 8th song, and then it was kind of like, hey, how you doing? I'm Ben Howard. And you're like,
hey, that with the
Benny.
Cure as well. Mm. They didn't even say one single thing to us. The Cure opened for The Cure. I was like, going to meet Robert Smith. I had my friend made a painting for him. You know, I was like, going to meet him. That band is so miff. They're actually, and as they're brilliant, as miff as they are, they're brilliant. But they each came in their own car. The singer, the drummer, the bass. I don't know if they had a motorfight or whatever, but they didn't mingle. So sometimes, but I think sometimes people have maybe a bad day. But yeah, it really sucks. Mm.
No, that's terrible. I also.
What did Ben say when he spoke?
Oh, no, he was like, I've got an all-female band. women need to come out to my shows. Why is he Australian now? Karen, don't make me do accents on the spot. Fuck. And I just thought it's so funny to hear your experience where you chop up a set and go based on what your audience react, and here's someone who just comes out and he's got 1 to 10 and he's just going to blow through them. And I mean, each to their own. What are the crowd like in COVID?
Amazing. Okay. When you do get one, it's amazing. I mean, I played for 2 hours. I went to Pretoria and I did, we were allowed to do shows in theatres at 50% capacity. So I did 2 nights. I went and shot a video, that Avi de Villiers song. And then I did 2 shows somewhere quickly on the side at the Atterbury Theatre. And I mean, the people are just so happy to be out. We're happy to be out. So I'm playing long shows. Every time I play now, it's almost 2 hours, an hour and a half. And then the encore lasts another half an hour. So it's just wonderful to play and to be around people. I'm an extrovert, so I feed off people. So I get really depro when I'm alone. I need people around.
Corinne's all right, everyone. It sounds like it's not a cry for help. We're going to have some Afrikaans friends. That's all right, we are Corinne. Wow, that was even stompy. All the word order was correct. I thought before you came, I have to look at that Afrikaans study guide, you know, just to make sure I had some idioms and idioma. Words. Exactly. Afrikaans. It's a very simple language.
It is. It's like baby Dutch.
Baby Dutch. Baby, it's a good Dutch name.
It is pretty much baby Dutch. If you go to Holland, people laugh at our language.
I sound like a little bit of a toddler stumbling.
It's dumbed
through.
Down. Very, very dumbed down. And the funny thing is most Afrikaners are very entitled and privileged and seem to think that they know everything. But our language literally has the fewest words of most languages in the world. It's also the youngest language.
Are those facts?
It's like the language below Afrikaans is emojicon.
Karen, are you speaking to your fan base?
No, I mean, I love it. I love simplicity. My mantra of my life is broad strokes. Whenever something's not working, it's because you're getting too intricate. Yeah, it has to be simple. You have to be able to explain something in a sentence or two, and then it's good. You know, or a song. If it takes too long, it's probably not going to be a good song.
Okay. Well, I've got a question for you. How convenient. But Afrikaans is plesierig. I'm sure you have been questioned about this song for the 18 years that it's been around.
No, never anybody asked me anything.
Sarcastic. Okay, we're doing some sarcasm. All right, Karen. But, you know, when I hear that, I immediately... So first I go, I don't really know what plesierig means.
Plesierig.
In the context, because for me...
Pleasurable.
Pleasurable. So like being Afrikaans is cool. What was your message with that?
The plesierig is more like delightful. The delightful insinuating also actually being polite.
Ordentlike.
Yeah, ordentlike. But polite. Being polite means to smile and pretending a bit more. It's not as natural as just being kind and friendly. Mm-hmm. Polite is... being kind and friendly. Come on, Ben Howard. He's not feeling it, but he's going, hello, everybody. Welcome to my show. This one's for Sam, who wants me to say something after the first one. So that's what politeness is. And it kind of, it causes a bit of constriction in your culture. And that's what it is like to be Afrikaans. We all sit at the table and we... pretend that everything's fine. My sister's having a nervous breakdown, and my brother's gay, and my father hates that, and my mother's having an affair. But we all just went to church, and now
that sounds like a normal family.
Yeah, but in Afrikaans culture, we don't talk
about it.
Don't say anything. Smile and don't share your feelings. So that's what happened there. And then I made that song, and then I screamed in the song, and that was. I didn't think I really brought something that was that different to the market. I just think I was the first woman who screamed in Afrikaans. So it was like,
yeah.
And then that, you know, then I had that gift of being loved and hated, which is horrible, but great.
I suppose if you're doing anything that's changing the way people think or listen, what they're listening to, you are going to have people that love you and you're going to have people that hate you. I think that's quite a normal human reaction.
Well, if you are true to yourself, you will have that reaction in your life. And we're all afraid of not being loved, but the funny thing is, if you're not being yourself, you're not really being loved. So it's better to have the 50%, hey?
Jeepers, Corin. Thank
you, 100%.
Corin, you're making me reevaluate my whole life. But, I mean, that is so crazy to me because I always thought that it's this, like, fun party song and it was about, you know, Afrikaans people. You know, it's fun to be Afrikaans. So I've that's hilarious that I've completely misread it. I thought it was, for me, I was like, it's so amazing that this young, blonde Afrikaans woman has reclaimed being an Afrikaner post-apartheid. Like, you know, when, it, you know, because I mean, post-apartheid, I'm going to say it properly. You know, Afrikaans must have been the least cool thing to be, especially growing up, I imagine. And now that's what I thought the song was about. But you're actually rebelling against the strictures of Afrikaans society. Corin, you're too spectacular for words.
So I've come from a culture of reappropriation, going back to we are the youngest language. So we've got this need to be pure, pure Afrikaans, 100%. But the thing is, we're not. We're actually the melting pot. We've got everybody in us. I was on a TV show once and they checked my DNA. I've got it all, every continent.
They checked your DNA?
Yeah, you take a little bit of spit with a little bit of oorstokkie and then they...
You sure this wasn't just a COVID test they were putting you through?
No, this was years ago, before the real road. But nobody's one race. You can look white, but you're definitely not. You can look black, you're not 100% black. I mean, unless you... Maybe you're a tribe in the Kalahari and you literally just live there and your ancestors all just live there. Maybe.
But there was still probably some colonizer who dipped in and out of it.
Some guy came around.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the place where people start is their community. So you know what I mean? Like you gotta start here in Kenilworth. You're starting here in Kenilworth and you kind of want to... You're going to get labeled and you're going to get boxed and you're going to get grouped. So make that choice yourself. And the best way to do it is to just start where you are with everything you dislike and like about who you are and just accept it. It's like, luckily I was a drug addict when I was a young teenager. So you learn this thing of kind of like accepting. The first step is to accept.
Okay, so the camera's just cut out. Corin once said she'd get stuck in a small room with you, and now here she is. Corin, your futuristic collaboration.
Yes, I'm doing this amazing thing with a futurist in New York called Faith Popcorn, and I met her through a podcast during lockdown. Can you believe it?
Look what we do for these people.
I'm making a whole album with her. It's incredible. It's going to come out probably next year.
And she's based in New York.
Yeah, and she's the futurist, the original futurist. She literally went to Coca-Cola and told them to sell water. And they said, why would people buy water? She told them in 1985. She, like the trend of in exclusive books where people have coffee.
Yes.
You know, she literally invented that trend for Barnes & Noble. Well, one of those bookshops. And she said to them, look, people don't want to buy books anymore. And they were afraid of the digital era. And she said, make it inviting.
And now she's included you in the future plans.
Well, I'm producing an album. We've formed a alternative band. She's 73 years old. She's an expert of 40 years in this field. And we are embedding her life's work. She invented 17 trends. And we're embedding it into an album. And these trends are consumer behavior. It's like small indulgences, pleasure of engineering. Yeah, okay, check it out. It's incredible. It's Faith Popcorn's Brain Reserve. You can learn all about her work. But she framed it as consumer behavior, but it's actually human behavior. So we've turned it into poetry and music. And
wow, fantastic.
Future, yeah.
That's amazing. And but more bringing it back to South African shores. You're in Cape Town now.
Yeah.
You've got Mothership Studios.
Yes.
And how has that been? I mean, because to be a creative is one thing and make music, but then to control the means of production in this, you know, Karl Marx would be proud.
I think you need space, like in a relationship. If you're an artist, it's almost like being in a relationship with your art. So you need space. You need workspace like this. You need to be able to play and work. So yeah, I feel like I always say, like I used to have crayons and pencils and now I have angle grinders and photographic equipment. And so it's just the scale of what I can do and the time, you know. So that's, yeah, to me, a dream. For me, it's always been about being able to be an artist full time. That's okay. My game. I'm not really, I mean, I like money and I like traveling and I like doing fun things, but for me, the aim is to be an artist. It's not easy. Everybody wants to be one. Mm. So I always, you know, invested back into art, and that kind of the studio just came about like that.
And it pays for itself almost tenfold. Okay. So that's a, I spoke to one of my girlfriends. It's a weird time we live in. You have to tell someone who the person is. But, and we were discussing that, and that's something that's very prevalent in Virginia Woolf's A Room of One's Own. And, you know, you need, and that was, she was more speaking about a woman back in the day, and, you know, you can't make anything, you can't contribute to a community if you don't have your own space. So what are you able to do? Because you've got, I'm going to say my first Afrikaans word here, Republiek van Zuid-Afrika, which, by the way, is the best name TV show I've ever come across.
Thank you.
Apart from
Hidia. Thank you.
But that's fantastic. So how do you produce that? What's been the main sort of...
For Mothership.
Yeah, for Mothership, and then because it's produced there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, originally I shot the first few series we did. We rented studios. We built Mothership from the ground, so it took a few years. But it is Mothership is a Mothership is a spaceship that's on its own voyage, you know, like a My Creative Voyage, but then it's also a harbor for people like you and people who want to shoot a commercial, maybe somebody that wants to come and do a show or take some pictures or work, just be creative. So my dream is that it, you know, grows and grows into a bigger creative hub. You know, I would be happiest if I would be able to play music and make films and make TV shows and write songs with people, but also have people creating podcasts and filming things and writing together and hanging out. Because I think that's what I miss most from varsity days. When you get older, you realize, wow, what a gift it was to be, and I'm sure you felt this in lockdown now, you know, to be around other creative people all the time, busy making stuff and suffering through it. And the camaraderie of it, it actually drives you to work and be more productive.
Absolutely. And I think something that you're speaking to very nicely, and what comes through in what you're saying is collaboration. I feel there's this odd sort, I don't know if it's a global attitude, it's certainly a South African attitude that if you have something, a concept, an idea, a show, you know, people tend to cling onto it very tight, like this is mine, you know,
yeah.
And to hear you speak about wanting to create a space, I mean, everyone says that, you know, everyone's like, we're going to create more spaces for, like, black voices, you know, and then they go do cocaine for a whole weekend in arcade. It's like, you're not creating any space for any, but you're actually doing it, and that's fantastic, very exciting.
Yeah, I love people, and I think, I mean, people are horrible, but I believe everybody inherently is good. There's something to be learned from every single person, not even the baddies, you know.
Mm.
You really have to be Hitler before we can say, okay, Nia. You know?
That's a good shirt.
but you have to exchange with people that are different from you. And I mean, coming back to what you said earlier about, you know, the early days when I did Afrikaners Plezierig and those things. On the one hand, you are part of a culture. You are South African, you're a woman, you're white, you're black, you're pink, you're whatever. But you cannot grow if you don't read, you don't travel, and you don't hang out with people that come from different backgrounds. Economic, spiritual, religious, sexual. You just will not grow.
No.
You won't reach your full potential, and you won't have a clear understanding of the planet.
It's almost been made, in some cases, worse by the internet, because all those things... You feel like you can almost do all of those things virtually. You know, you can experience different cultures. You can see different videos. You know, you're not like growing up in an apartheid state where you like there's state television and that sort of stuff. You've got all this stuff out there. But what invariably happens is that you get stuck in these echo chambers of people, you know, they share the same stuff. They post about the same sort of topics. And then that kind of justifies your belief. And because everyone's nodding at you, I mean, yeah, you're
but you forgot
celebrity.
About one thing, and that's the robot, the algorithm.
The algorithm.
The algorithm is also the thing that's controlling us. So, and
but made by humans.
Made by humans, so therefore they are going to end up being very fascist. It's already happening. Your algorithm, people are so excited to say, a friend of mine just created an app, a law firm that created an app, so you can on the app apply. These things are going to become very dangerous because the algorithm is going to say, oh, no, don't give the black guy the home loan because he's not a good candidate.
Mm.
Don't give the job to the woman because she's not a good candidate. She's going to have a baby. And
Give
her a middle management position because when she's middle-aged, that's when she's going to be indispensable. It won't cost you a lot of money. The algorithm is saying, so people more than ever need to think for themselves and not think that they are part of this information world where everything is, it's being fed to you, mm-hmm. and robots are being created by humans to control you.
Absolutely. No, well, I would agree with you on many fronts. I think, and that's the whole uproar that we have with like Silicon Valley, and it's like, these are people who are with keystrokes shaping the world and how people think, and you know, how did they get there? It's not, I mean, politicians are useless, but at some stage they were vetted. Yeah. Mark Zuckerberg, in no stage of his career, has been... I mean, he was hauled in front of the Supreme Court, but the senators, congressmen speaking to him didn't even really comprehend what Facebook is or could do. So, I mean, that is the scary thing. And then movies like The Social Dilemma, I don't know if you've seen on Netflix, just came out. And it's, the future is exciting, but you know, when all this Elon Musk and technology... I actually am, you know...
But that's why, if you're singular, if you want to live a cookie cut out life, you can live it more than you could back in the apartheid. Mm. Because you can just live into your own cocoon and read and consume whatever your Netflix tells you to do. It's all about you. It's all about customization. But I mean, interesting thing. I saw this thing the other day. You know, Bluetooth, the B and the H. Bluetooth, when you're on your phone, the symbol for Bluetooth.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about a company.
It's a Viking writing because it was a chief. His name was Bluetooth. That's why it's called Bluetooth. And he was a great communicator. That's why the Danish Ericsson invented Bluetooth. And that's why they called it Bluetooth because it's about communication. And the Danish, even though they, I mean, people think it's China and America, but I mean, the real technological advancements, the 360 vibes, the great cars and the great quality, you know, technology stuff, comes from those cold places like Norway and Denmark and so
Nordic, wow.
Yeah, and the coolest, weirdest music always also, you know, comes from there. But in Denmark, kids go to a kind of a Feltskool.
Mm-hmm.
Where they go and they learn to cook and make forge swords and because I think they know that one day as krag regtig trip, if it's really like okay, load shedding and not a load shedding Eskom when the technology for some reason cuts out, the people that would be able to make an omelet, change a tire, read a map, start a fire, who are they going to be?
The leaders of the world. Karen, you're making...
The one who can cook will be the big boss. The one who can hunt will be the big boss.
Karen, you're starting to terrify me. I feel like I need to go do a driving lesson now after this or learn how to kill a man with my bare hands. No, yeah. I mean, that's what Corona for me has shown us. Like, we have all these airs and pretenses of who we are as this superior human race and we're better than everything. The whole human race, I'm not you know, we're better than nature, da da da. COVID was like,
I'll kill you.
Nature can stop things, it's over, like, you know, and I think that speaks to I also think that's like that trailer trash American who's stocking up on. You've got someone in Brakpan.
Yeah, but you know what?
Yeah.
You know what? Everybody needs a mechanic.
That's true.
You know what? There's a time in everybody's life when all they need is a mechanic. We've become so full of ourselves that we, you know, it feels as if we're creating things. It feels as if, you know, so people are struggling because everything's virtual.
Mm-hmm.
Virtual relationships, virtual shopping, virtual. So you feel like you've achieved things. And I catch myself, I mean, I'm not like immune to this.
Mm-hmm.
We all feel like we're doing a hell of a lot, but you haven't. You've been reading something on the internet and then you went this and you thought you were going to. We get distracted so easily.
Mm-hmm.
Because the very thing, that's why I'm super grateful for music, because if I don't play and I don't have the discipline of actually playing, I'll lose it. So I have to practice every day.
So it's repetitive, therapeutic. It's the whole bang shoe.
It's undistracted. It's like when you do that, I think all of us need something where, and you know, people think it's children that are addicted to the internet. Of course it is, but you know how many elderly people are alone and they're just on Facebook scrolling all the time.
Scrolling their lives away. So as the famous Barry Roux once said, I put it to you, Garden. Do you remember that? The Oscar Pistorius, he was, I put it to you. I put, Your Honor, I put it to you. Everyone watched that. It was kind of gross. But anyway, we can always circle back to the drugs. I've said, I think around 30, between 35 and 40, I'm going to develop a cocaine habit, and the people around me are just going to have to move with it because it's how I'm going to facilitate being famous. And I've already told my parents about that so they can prepare themselves. Anyone else listening who cares for me, that's what will be happening. 35 to 40, there's a nasty coke habit.
Cocaine. It's going to make you so anxious, Sam.
I know, I'm already...
I don't know, I'd rather go for something on the downside. I think you're...
I don't have the sinuses for cocaine.
I don't think you have...
I don't. I have to have an ENT.
I look at your face, I listen to you speak, you're already overthinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's... Cocaine is not for you.
No, I'm only teasing. This has just popped into my racing mind. And I've wanted to chat to you about it, and especially like archive it. Because that's what I also love about this. It doesn't matter if I become a millionaire from this, probably not going to happen. Or, you know, this implodes tomorrow. But all these interactions are forever now. And I wanted to say...
It's a very cool artistic expression. You're collecting.
All good. Okay, we're back. Corin's got a mask on. These are unsponsored ads. You know, we just, instead of flooding the markets with some crazy new product, we give you silence. It's wonderful.
But jump cuts.
This isn't even the real Corin. It's your body double.
It is.
Minky van der Westhuizen. Great to have you on. Crazy.
Good choice. Good. Perfect choice for that's me as a body double.
It's
by
a
the
flattering
way.
Comment. But she's also quite old now, isn't it? No, not the old. Minky.
Oh, Minky.
What, she was Miss
Africa. Hey?
What was she? What was she famous for?
She's a model, world famous model.
She wasn't Miss That's Rolling.
She was, you know what she was very famous for? Original claim to fame was she was a Sports Illustrated model and she was on the cover of it and she was loved by American soldiers. She was the most popular women, it's kind of depressing.
That's like, you know, they're in Iraq, then they've got the cutouts and
Minky's
getting
me. They're just admiring her beautiful smile.
It's one of the funniest words in Afrikaans, and
that
it's
is
the one
terrible.
I
mean. We can't say that about Minky.
Minky, oh,
shame.
Okay,
don't
we
do
can't.
That. Don't burn the girl down.
A soldier skommel, I believe.
Oh my god, no.
It's my favorite Afrikaans word, skommel. Because what does it mean? Everyone knows. Anyway, let's talk a bit about your outfit.
Thank you.
The producer of the show said cultural appropriation.
No, bro.
This is from the Waikato
this
tribe.
This is from the Strand. This is a girl from the Strand. Her company's called Flock.
Oh, yeah?
This is also Cape Town, Raftan. They're from Kenilworth.
And
they
haven't
made these amazing masks.
Yeah.
Yeah. This girl makes clothing. My cousin is one of the organizers of Africa Burn.
Okay.
So and then
is this where the drugs came in?
No.
It was at this time you became an addict.
20 years ago. So
really?
Yeah, it's
okay.
Very long. When dinosaurs roamed the earth was the last time.
If you could sum your drug addiction up in a couple of sentences.
Whew, painful.
There we go. One word. I think a lot of families would agree.
Painful. Towards yourself, everybody around you. It's, yeah.
It's not pretty for anyone. No. But you, I mean, you've done it. You did drugs very early on in your life. When did you develop an addiction?
13.
Oh, my God.
No, I quit before Law school. I quit before I was 21. So I was a teenage.
You just did it all. Wow.
Teenage junkie.
13 to 21. Mm. That's crazy. You never really hear of these sort of stories because you come from quite a prestigious background. I mean,
I don't think so.
Your father was a diplomat and you're anything but diplomatic.
Yeah, I come
diplomatic.
From a privileged family, yes. We had a tennis court and a swimming pool.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when did... what was the impetus for drugs?
Difficult family life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... struggled. Mother died when I was 9. Father remarried. And trouble at home,
mm-hmm.
I'd say.
Wow. You never say. You never say because usually these people are broken. But that's almost maybe you accelerated all your grief when you're this young person, go through like the most turbulent time and come out the other side. Like I'm sure, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but you'd rather have done that now than have a crack up when you've an established artist or the family. Now is not the time for...
Yeah, I think my childhood taught me... my childhood was very difficult. In one way, I was very privileged. In another way, it was extremely difficult, lonely, and scary. So, I had a big need. When I was a child, I just wanted to get out of my house. I just wanted to get away. And I was forced to be there. So I think that's what happened. Propelled me towards music, I think saved me in a big sense there. Because it was something that always, and still to this day, you know, if I'm feeling stressed or anxious, you know, would you say you want to use a cocaine for when you're 35 or 40 years old? I literally, if I listen to music and I calm myself. Yeah. If I play music, I calm myself. It's something that I kind of like cigarettes used to be that to me, like a little dummy that I used to suck on. And now it's just to my music, you know.
No more cigarettes either.
5 years clean.
Nice, nice. A COVID high five. There's
Thank you. There's that was the hardest thing I ever did.
Really?
Yeah, harder than heroin. Much harder.
Harder than heroin?
Yeah, because heroin is bad. Everybody will tell you it's bad. It's terrible. You're going to die, you know. But
just talking a lot of shit.
No, but you know, like cigarettes, people always say it's bad. You're going to die. But yeah, you can buy it at the shop. Someone's going to smoke it in front of you at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, it's always there and it's... You've got to...
But I mean, you could take that another level and alcohol. You know, it's the most accepted thing. It's like a national sport in South Africa.
Yeah. I never was... I drink, but I've never been addicted to drinking.
To booze.
I can do the French way. I can do 2 glasses of wine and go home. I can. I think that's when you know you can. I have friends who can't drink at all because they can't do that. But I think you have a problem if you're not able to... If you say you meet a friend for a beer, that means have 2 beers.
Yeah.
If you can't do that, then have a bottle of wine over dinner. Mm.
That's so interesting because alcoholism runs in my family.
Really?
And and I went through this very bad patch, like going through a breakup, the usual angsty bullshit, and I was literally being like scraped off pavements after parties because it wasn't. It's not like 2 drinks, you can go home. It's like 2 drinks, now I'm going to be the most drunk and the most fun and the most loud. And that kind of like becomes your personality.
Mm.
And it's something that I'm not like a special case, you know. This is, it's pervasive. And I think a lot of people in Cape Town will be able to relate to it. You got this young group of binge drinkers who live for the weekend. And you'll go out to a club like Arcade and you'll get fucked up on Friday, you have the most terrible Saturday morning, you go out to another club on Saturday, you get fucked. And then like on Caprice, you're doing it again. So you've gone out Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you're getting either blackouts or close. And it's like a lifestyle. And it's just because people are doing it or you're a group of people who do it, it becomes normalized and it's just...
But you know what? It is alcohol, all the stuff we do. It's all stuff because we want to connect so badly, and we're so scared of getting hurt.
Yeah.
And so you take the, you know, the drink takes the edge off, or the cigarette. Well, cigarettes were like that for me, you know, have a smoke, because you can ask somebody for a light.
Yeah, so very social.
You can speak to somebody and they can meet you. And but when you take it away, it's kind of hard to speak to a stranger.
Because just you.
Because it's like, yeah. Hi, how are you? How are you? You know, and so it's hard to be a grown-up, Sam. It's hard. It doesn't get easier, I'm afraid.
No, I don't imagine. But I feel
like I have no words of wisdom about that.
You've got to go through the... Like, now I'm very aware of alcohol in my life. And we were out the other day, and you, like, have two or three beers, and you had Hudson's. Because I've been a prisoner to my own mind during Corona. Because of the, like, the language of Corona. It's like, you know, if you give it to your parents, they're going to die. And you're like, fuck.
Yeah,
you know, so you're very, you know, you're very careful. And so it's the first time I'm out, I'm having a few beers, and you kind of feel that... You know, you slip it, and you know, you could have, and then you go. But my thing, which is good now, is like, there's no draw, so you must stop. Because there's no party, because I'm not going to go into a club of people now and socialize. So,
yeah.
Corona made me sober.
Wow.
That's a joke. But yeah, I think it's also people, you know, famous people, people like yourself, you know, other artists, South African artists, Robert Downey Jr., they all have these stories of, you know, where they. But a lot of normal people, normal South Africans, battle with this daily. And it's just because of the liquor industry in South Africa, you know, there's such a booze culture that you just do it. You know, like imagine a group of men standing around a braai without alcohol. It would be weird.
Yeah.
Well,
actually, no. I mean, I know because maybe because I'm a muser, I know a lot of people that are completely recovered alcoholics, you know. Like, Theo's got this story. He was at a gig and the guy was like, he was bringing everybody tequila. And everybody had a tequila. And Theo's been dry for almost 25 years.
Oh,
and he's like, do you want a tequila? And Theo's like, no, I don't drink. And the guy's like, pussy. That's like, of all the things the guy could say.
You're pussy.
Like, yeah. So that sums up what it's like. But if you're strong in yourself, and once again, you're doing it, if you know why you're doing something, then what other people say.
Yeah.
If you're a little bit of a sensitive soul, and most people actually are, if you're
is.
A sensitive person, but you know, and artistic people, we're all prone to the dark side. We're all prone to overthinking, and that's what Corona did to the world now. You know, we're all confronted at the same time with mortality, but also on life. So, life. What do you want out of your life? You can't... We don't know. I don't know how long mine still is. You don't know about yours. We can try and have a, you know, extend it, but a truck could hit me when I walk out the garden gate here. You know, it doesn't...
Yeah.
There's no guarantees, but, if you're a sensitive person, you are drawn to... And if you're intelligent, you overthink things, which is why don't use cocaine, because it's you're going to think even more.
That thing is going to be holed up.
I cried so much on cocaine.
Really?
Tell you something. Woo, you cry at the end of that night.
Yeah.
Your brain doesn't go to sleep.
No, I was only joking about cocaine. Can't. Like I said, I've got too many sinus issues for cocaine. But anyway, speaking of raging alcoholics, you collaborated recently with A.B. de Villiers. everyone knows he likes to hit the bottle.
A for alcohol.
Yeah.
Alcoholic beer, de Villiers. No, A.B.,
you can speak about him. I know you guys are close. Get a beer franchise
going.
No,
A.B. A.B. has a beer, but he's like a straight edge. He's probably the most straight edge person I've ever worked with. More than Annelie van Rooyen. He's truly like a head boy dude.
Really?
But a nice one. The one that you know, the good one.
The good head boy.
Yeah, the nice head boy suddenly doesn't sound like a good word.
It seems like an insult.
Gross.
What's happening?
So, yeah, he was on my show. And when he came onto the show, I said, you have to sing because he loves music. He comes, I know his family as well, and they all play guitar and sing around the fire and kind of thing. And he made a little album a few years ago, and I said to him, you know, come on the show and sing. And then I said to him, why don't we do an album? So the flame came about. We're actually working towards doing a full album for AB because I think it'll be great, you know.
I'm convinced you taught him how to sing. And let me go here. Because Brad Holmes is, you know, the bass line, and Brad's in Joburg, and if you're in Joburg and do what Brad, you like kind of know everyone somehow. And he would always joke, you know, like, AB, he's the most talented sportsman South Africa has probably ever seen in terms of just sheer talent. Wade van Niekerk, you're in my thoughts. But, you know, he's like, why is he trying to play guitar? And then, you know, they would joke a bit about him.
Yeah.
When he came onto your show, there was no, like, it was good.
Yeah.
It was seriously good. And then, is it Die Vlam or The Flame?
The Flame.
Okay.
The
Flame. Broader audience.
And the thing is, The Flame is, I sing, we fan the flame. And he sings, we found the flame, because we had to do it remotely. So it's like that. I could have done my vocal over, but I thought it's actually quite funny and, like, poetic that, you know, he found... He's got it, the head boy.
Yeah.
And I'm still fanning and trying to get the fire going. And I just left it like
that. Wow, that's hilarious. That is, because did you know that the Protea's whole marketing campaign stemmed from Protea Fire? Or is that just a happy coincidence? Yeah, because their whole campaign, it was like Protea Fire.
No.
And other Proteas are in fire because of cricket
South
Africa.
Yeah, they grow because of the fire, yeah.
Oh, no, that's... you look at where your mind is. You're just a couple steps ahead of me. I meant like CSA. It's like bankrupt and corrupt.
I'm seeing that King Protea on Table Mountain after the fire.
Holier than thou, Corin. You're such a wonderful soul. I'm like, corruption. You're like...
the fire brings new life. Cleanses the phone balls.
So, we've spoke a bit about famous people here. Who is the one who's on your sort of pedestal? I know you don't put people on pedestals, but who's some person that walk into a room that would really command your?
It's actually so many people. It's not that it's nobody. It's actually that it's so many people. And I mean, maybe you think I don't, but I am scared when I do those interviews. I mean, I crapped myself when I interviewed Thuli Madonsela, Peter Dirk Ace, like Johnny Clegg. I cried. I mean, it's blind. You actually do these things that are not, I don't do them because it's easy. It's hard. It's scary. But, I'm a real fangirl.
Okay.
To my detriment. But so I'm that middle-aged... That exploitable, I've got an exploitable quality to my personality, but I love,
look at you, you're a kid on toast.
Yeah, look at me now. I love hanging out with nice people. I love hanging, like, this is great. I mean, I've been forced to hang out with horrible people. I was forced to go to horrible schools. I was forced to go to horrible family gatherings and sit through boring things in my life. So, you know, if I can hang out with cool people and interesting people, and I'm happy.
That's lovely.
I'm happy.
Do you ever feel people are, because they constantly want something from you because you are this brand, so how do you, differentiate between, you know, coming on and, you know, really doing me a favor here versus feeling like someone's just constantly exploiting you?
No. Well, I will not be exploited consciously in any ways. I own my work and I do have my personal boundaries. And by the way, I'm not here because of anything other than it is for me also. It's good for me to not just stay in the same place doing the same things with the same established people. I want to find the new kids who eat toast. I want to connect with, and I think my whole life I live by that, you know, that you learn from everybody, and you need to have friends that are older than you, and you need to have friends that are younger than you, and then I want to learn from you. I'm not here to teach you anything. I'm just here to be with you and share and exchange, and I think that is what's changed in the world that I'm grateful for, because when I was a kid it was like, yes, I'll dit doen, and yes, I'll so staan, and this is what a girl does, this is what a boy does, this is how you sit, that's what your opportunity is. And now it's not about that. This is the boss, the older person is, and the kids are, they're seen and not heard. Now, it's different. We've learned that Greta Thunberg, who is as a person who is Asperger's, who in my generation, in our time, would have been discredited as any kind of voice, can affect the planet.
Yeah.
You know? And that is, I think, wonderful. And that's, I live by that. So there's no, I think the biggest problem you have when you're young, or when you're starting out, is that you don't, you have imposter syndrome and you're new to it. Mm-hmm. And I think I've been sent here to tell you, you will have it for the rest of your life. Mm. Get used to it. Just get used to it. I feel like it all the time. I feel like it all the time. I sit in an interview at a show. I'm like, how did I end? I worked with Faith Popcorn. I was like, how's this happening? Mm. I'm talking to AB de Villiers. We're doing this big thing. How did this happen?
Yeah.
But it's just, feel it. Yeah. Wow, this is cool. Or, whoa, I can't believe it. But then, okay, and I'm here. So let me try. I've got a shot. Because that's what happens to us. We feel, oh, I don't belong here. I'm not good enough. Or they're gonna notice that I don't really know anything. And it's like, you know what? Nobody knows anything. Donald Trump could be the president for America for a couple of years. Then anything is possible.
Believe in yourself, you donkeys.
Believe in yourself, and confidence is one thing he taught us. When I was 19, my band sucked. Sucked. But the music I listened to, great music. As long as I'm reading the books that I think I aspire, and you never, ever stop aspiring. And I think the people that become assholes are the ones that at some point decide that they know things.
Mm.
They know everything. They're experts.
No.
Talking so much shit here.
It's usually like funny shit. This is like life lesson.
Very deep. But going deep, what, yo. It's Dr. Phil.
Irrespective of what happens, what we've experienced here has changed the way I think already. So that's literally what you're saying, is you put yourself into positions with young people, old people. And again, that's what I feel. Again, I'm going on that white man little pity party. In Corona, we've been robbed of that. Of course, like, we've seen fantastic creative projects. People have been like, okay, I can pursue this. This was born in Corona. But then in terms of actually interacting with people, that's not there. And that's why these like small, but studio interactions are just so precious. And so thank you for all those nice things. Karen, you've been absolutely fantastic. When I say it has been a privilege, I genuinely mean that. It's been so lovely to chat to you.
For me too. Love it. Love the toast. Wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Aww. No one, the last people didn't say thank you. I was like, where must I make up this quote from?
It's just because you don't have enough Afrikaans people on the show.
Lekker mens. That's my favorite thing. Lekker mens. Let's just make this an Afrikaans show.